When looking through this week's parsha, one can't help but to be struck by the number of topics discussed that relate to marriage and man-woman relationships. You find, for instance, Yifas Toar, Nara Hamurasa, Anusa, Yibum V'Chalitza, Get, Arayos, Eshes Ish, the idea that the first year of marriage a man shouldn't go out to war. It seems very odd that so many halachos relating to guidance in our relationships between men and women should be mentioned randomly, or seemingly randomly, throughout the parasha. So question number one is, what's the purpose, or what's the message that one is supposed to take from all of these different parashos, all of these different sections of the parasha that relate to men-women issues? Second, the Torah warns us in this week's parasha, in Parashas Ki Seitzei, Lo yavo amoni moavi bekal Hashem, that one is not allowed to, we're not allowed to marry an amoni moavi, they're not allowed to enter into the congregation of Hashem, and the pasuk gives the reason for it. Al devar shelo kidmu aschem belachem u'bemayim bederech b'teischem yimitzrayim, because they did not greet us with bread and water when we were leaving Mitzrayim. And then the pasuk gives another reason. Vasher sachar alechas Bilam ben Ba'ar, and it says lekal alecha, that they also hired Bilam ben Ba'ar to curse us. So the Torah itself gives two reasons that we're not allowed to marry an Ammoni Moavi, that an Ammoni Moavi is not allowed into the Kal Hashem. Number one, they didn't greet us with lechem u'mayim, and number two, they hired Bilam ben Ba'ar to curse us. Rashi himself adds a third reason. Al Dvar Rashi says, Al ha'itza sheyatzu eschem lahachtiachem, that he's the one that gave the advice of how to cause the Klal Yisrael to stumble, how to cause Klal Yisrael to do averos. So apparently, in total, the way Rashi understands it, the Torah gives three reasons to not allow an Ammoni Moavi to marry into the Jewish people. And the questions are obvious. First, why is it necessary to have three reasons for the exact same halacha? And second, in comparison to the other two reasons, the notion of these nations not greeting us with bread and water seems to be a mild concern at most. Why does that earn a place alongside the far more severe concerns of Bilam cursing us, of Bilam causing us to do averos? Bread and water, okay, so they weren't Bali Chesed, they didn't go out of their way for us. Is that really as terrible as the other two? How does it belong on the same list even? So perhaps to answer these questions, we can suggest the following yesod. The Jewish people are very unique in many different ways, but what stands out most, Chazal at least point to, are three particular traits that really exemplify what we're all about. Chazal say that Klal Yisrael, the unique characteristics of Klal Yisrael are that they are Rachmanim, Baishanim, V'gomlei Chasadim. In order for one to become a true card-carrying member of the Jewish people, they must possess all these attributes of Rachmanim, Baishanim, V'gomlei Chasadim. What does this mean exactly? So a Rachman is somebody who shows concern for other people, somebody who's truly moved and troubled by the plight of others. I was just reminded this week, obviously with all the inclement weather and all the hurricane threats that were going on this week, of what happened in Hurricane Katrina a couple of years ago. And I remember that I received a letter from an 8-year-old girl during Hurricane Katrina, or right in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. And the letter was accompanied by a check written by her parents for $68. And the letter was written in response to a request, an appeal that I had made for money to help out a family of a rabbi from New Orleans who Rabbi Lamb had asked me to try to help out, see what I can do. And the letter read as follows. Dear Rabbi Leibowitz, my friends helped me raise this money. I hope it's enough to help. We sold iced tea door to door, plus my brother donated $5. I went through Woodmere and North Woodmere to raise the money. The total is $68. Please give it to the rabbi and his kids. Thanks for helping me do this mitzvah. Now, you ever hear such a letter from an 8-year-old girl? That's the definition of a Rachman. Besides for the definition of good parenting, that's the definition of a Rachman. Somebody who so acutely feels the pain of others that they're moved to try and do something even if they're not expected to be capable of helping in any way. Who would have expected an 8-year-old to try to help? But look what she did. She took it upon herself, and she couldn't not do something. She's a Rachman. A Baishan is one who lives a life of tznius. The Mishnah tells us, As panim legehenim, uboshes panim legan eden. Clearly, the definition of Baishan, according to the Mishnah, is the opposite of Azus, of brazenness. We are a fine, classy, and dignified people. We do not brazenly walk around in a manner that reflects a sense of arayos, a sense of gaiva. We are tsnuim, we're understated. A gomel chesed is one who's not only moved by the plight of other people, but uses all of their resources to help those who are in need. What a Rachman feels, a gomel chesed turns into action. The little girl was a Rachman when she heard about the tragedy in New Orleans, but she became a gomel chesed when she started selling iced tea door to door. Rav Zalman Soroskin points out that when Avram separated from Lot, he did so because he noticed that Lot was lacking in all three of these areas. Number one, Lot's shepherds grazed in other people's fields, showing no sense of feeling for other people, the exact opposite of Rachmanus. Number two, Lot was drawn to Sodom because, as the Medrash tells us, he was interested in the sexual escapades that Sodom had to offer, and later in life, as it turned out, he slept with his own daughters, the exact opposite of Baishanim. And number three, when, as the Medrash tells us, Lot was chosen to serve on the, so to speak, Hachrasas Orchim committee in Sodom to enforce their policies about guests, he showed just how far he was from being a Gomel Chesed, at least according to the Medrash's account. Against this backdrop, it's not surprising that the descendants of Lot, Amon and Moab, exhibit the same failings that their Zaydi did. It's because of these shortcomings in these three crucial areas that they're not permitted to marry into the Jewish people. Number one, Sheya'atu la'achtiyam. Right? Rashi quotes the idea that the reason we're not allowed to marry Amon and Moavim is because Bilam is the one that gave the advice to cause us to do Averos, to do the Averos of Arayos. The fact that they were willing to have their women come out and lead us into Arayos showed the most extreme and callous form of Azos imaginable. These are people who are so far from being Baishanin that being a member of Klal Yisrael is not an option. Number two, Ashalo kidmu aschem b'lechem uvimayim. Why is Amon and Moav not allowed b'kal Hashem? They didn't come to greet us with bread and water. Now their failure to come and give us bread and water reflects a complete lack of an inclination toward Gemilas Chasadim, another trait absolutely necessary to become a Jew. And number three, Sachar alecha as Bilam ben Ba'or l'kal alecha, they hired Bilam to curse us. The hiring of Bilam to curse us shows how instead of feeling for the plight of the slave nation that had left Egypt and commiserating with us, they cruelly tried to have us wiped out, and they would have been successful had it not been for God's intervention. So the idea that there are three reasons for Amon and Moav not joining the Kal Hashem is not that each reason isn't good enough, but it's that these three reasons reflect the three major components of what it takes to be a Jew. These three reasons represent the three midos that are unique to Klal Yisrael. And that's why Lechem U'mayim is on the list. Of course it's not as bad an Avera to not greet us with Lechem U'mayim as it is to curse us and to want us to die and to cause us to do Averos. It's not as bad an Avera, but what it reflects about who they are, what it reflects about their basic character and whether they are ready to join the Jewish people, that it's on par with the other two. Now, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky Zatzal develops the idea that the entire Sefer Devarim is geared toward issues that pertain to Klal Yisrael as a whole. The book focuses on the job of a king, a government, and the broader Jewish community, as opposed to individual responsibilities. It's therefore very curious that there are so many psukim within Sefer Devarim spent on obligations that relate to a husband-wife relationship, a relationship that seems to be a deeply personal one. The natural conclusion to draw, Rav Yaakov explains, is that a Jewish marriage does not only relate to the two partners in the marriage, but to the entire tzibur as well. This is why we call somebody who can't marry a Jew, what? A psulei kahal! Somebody who can't join the broader Jewish community, the kihila. What do you mean they can't join the kihila? They can't marry a person. Not just a psul nisuin, someone who can't marry, but someone who can't come into the kahal. This is also why when we have a chassan in shul, the entire shul doesn't say tachnun. Whereas when an avel is in shul, doesn't stop the entire shul from saying tachnun. Why? Because marriage is an issue that relates to the entire tzibur. while the Avelus is a uniquely personal experience. While Rav Yaakov doesn't explain the connection between marriage and a tzibur, he just leaves it at that for us to explore and for us to figure out what exactly this connection is between marriage and a tzibur. Perhaps we can explain that the very same qualities that are symbols of the Jewish community as a whole, and that are necessary for one to join the Jewish community of Rachmanim, Baishanim, and Gomlei Chasadim, are the same exact qualities that are the most important for a successful marriage. One who's not trained in these qualities through experiencing marriage cannot become a full contributing member of the Jewish people. Before the Yom Noraim, hopefully we all spend a lot of time contemplating our lives and what we can do better. And when engaged in serious thought about our lives, we can't help but to think about the most precious thing we have in our lives, namely our families. Part of the tshuva process and the self-examination that we do should and must involve reflection about how to be better spouses. These three qualities can provide us with guidance and a framework within which to work on ourselves when thinking about our successes and shortcomings in marriage. Have we been rachmanim to the extent necessary? When our spouse is upset or otherwise pressured, have we immediately turned our attention to how difficult we have it also? And start to think, oh, you think you had a bad day, you should hear about my day. You think you're not feeling well, my head hurts. Or have we tried to genuinely feel what our spouse is going through, even when we weren't capable of doing anything about it? Have we been gomlei chasadim? When we have a chance to help out our spouses in real practical ways, have we shied away from these opportunities and responsibilities? Or have we taken advantage of them and fulfilled our most basic requirement of chesed, which begins at home, which begins with the family? And finally, the true defining characteristic of a Jewish marriage is that we are bishanim. There are things that society considers fair game for public discussion that we make sure to leave in the private arena. When sitting with other people, there are comments that we don't make, topics that we do not discuss. Our tznius is what defines us. And all of these characteristics, rachmanim, baishanim, and gomlei chasadim, define us as a nation, and they define us as a spouse, they define us as a family, as family people. And through enhancing our own family lives, focusing on these particular midos, we'll find ultimately that we're not only enhancing ourselves, and we're not only enhancing our family life, but we're actually enhancing the very quality of all of Klal Yisrael. And the impact of people who are willing to focus on these midos, the impact that such people could have on Klal Yisrael is unbelievable. Because when we're able to highlight what makes us special, and we're able to work on what makes us special, then we're going to be able to go in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam and say, look, we've lived up to all of your expectations. Here we are, just a few weeks before Rosh Hashanah. We're about to go in front of the Melech. Mirtz Hashem, we should all be able to say, we belong to the Kahal, we belong to this great nation, and we represent the ideals that the Kahal, that Kedushas Yisrael is supposed to represent, of Rachmanim, Baishanim, the Gomlei Chasadim.